It was a summer day, much like today. I was probably 7 or 8 years old, and my aunt and my uncle and their 4 children came to visit us at our home in New Jersey. My uncle was a career officer in the United States Air Force, and he was stationed in Texas. I had never met this aunt or uncle or my cousins before, so it was a big deal when their Rambler station wagon, we are aging ourselves, aren't we? When their Rambler station wagon pulled up in front of the house, there was so much energy, so much excitement, and I remember my uncle giving us several 8x10 black and white photographs of the Air Force Thunderbirds flying in formation. Now, I thought that was the coolest thing. And I remember one of my cousins telling us about Texas horned lizards. It was fun. It was a break in the usual mundane days of summer. And of course, we knew that my aunt and uncle and cousins were coming. They had given us plenty of lead time. Some 4,000 years ago, when Abraham was sitting by the door of his tent in the midday sun, 3 strangers suddenly appeared. Today, if 3 strangers appeared at our door, we would assume the worst. Either a sales team or a group seeking to save us by inviting us to church, or an envoy with news of tragedy, those would be our first inclinations. And instead of answering the door with an extravagant welcome, we might be inclined to open the door just a crack to suss out the situation, and then determine whether we should open it more fully or shut it abruptly. You see, we live in a society that is understandably on alert when strangers appear out of nowhere, people we don't know. Well, instead of feeling suspicious or guarded, we are told that Abraham actually ran to greet these 3 strangers and welcome them. He bowed down to them. Now, ancient hospitality in the Middle East was usually very gracious. You see, there was a lot of migration going on, a lot of wandering, a lot of nomadic travel, and people naturally needed places to rest and refresh. Abraham and Sarah happened to be very generous hosts. They offered their very best to these strangers. Abraham and Sarah had traveled a great distance themselves to settle in Canaan, so they understood full well the importance of hospitality. Abraham had no idea that when those visitors arrived, that he would be hosting God along with two divine messengers. The news that this divine messenger, this holy one we call God, this message brought shock and awe. Instead of asking for something from Abraham, the divine visitor came with news about a gift. Sarah, Abraham's wife, would become pregnant and have a son. The news is shocking for a couple of reasons. First, Sarah had never been able to get pregnant during her childbearing years. The Bible tells us that Sarah was barren. And second, Sarah was now very advanced in age, far, far beyond menopause. There was no possibility of her having a child. But Sarah was in the tent, and she overheard God's message to Abraham from within the tent, and all she could do was laugh. It was the laughter of disbelief. The laughter of someone who thinks this messenger is off his rocker. This messenger is crazy. He's a nutcase. But here's the thing. Much earlier, God had promised a child, children, to Abraham. And as you know, a promise is a very important thing. We all know what it's like when someone promises us something and then doesn't follow through. We can have feelings of anger, hurt, and certainly betrayal. Broken promises hurt. And here God had promised Abraham that his descendants would be as numerous as the stars in the sky on a clear moonlit night. God had said to Abraham, look up to the heavens. Look at those stars. Your descendants are going to outnumber all of those. This promise of children, of offspring, was made to Abraham. But as Abraham and Sarah viewed the situation, the result was not happening. You see, they were contending with Sarah's inability to have children. And so they hatched a plan. They would take matters into their own hands. Instead of trusting the promise of God, they hatched a scheme. In fact, it was Sarah's idea. She suggested that Abraham take Sarah's slave girl, Hagar, as a wife in order to produce an heir, to continue the family line, to make the promise that God made come true. And Hagar did give Abraham a son, and his name was Ishmael. But this plan that Sarah and Abraham had hatched went awry. It wasn't long before Sarah became insanely furious with Hagar, because, of course, Hagar was now looking down on Sarah and treating her with contempt. Sounds like a soap opera, doesn't it? Made for TV. And so Sarah sent Hagar and Ishmael packing. Now, Ishmael would become known as a prophet in the religion of Islam. This is how Christians, Jews, and Muslims are all related to Abraham. Fascinating story. The plan Sarah and Abraham had hatched seemed to go sideways. It seemed logical, except that God had promised Abraham and Sarah a child without Abraham and Sarah having to take control to make it happen. Now, this puts the question of faith square in the middle of the story of Abraham and Sarah, and also squarely on us. How often do you and I try to take control of the situation and move God to the sidelines? When do you and I try to do God's job when God should be doing that job? Instead of trusting God. Now, taking control has some obvious benefits. I don't want to be down on control. It has benefits in some situations. But are we taking control because we don't trust? Are we doing the work of someone else that is not ours to do? Is our faith something bigger than conventional logic and wisdom? Or do logic and wisdom sometimes actually get in the way of trusting the promises of God? Biblical scholar Walter Brueggemann argues that Abraham and Sarah resigned themselves to a closed future. They had given up hope. They accepted hopelessness. They didn't trust the promise. Now, not everything we want from God will be provided in life. You and I know that firsthand. God is not a genie. However, God does make good on the promises that God makes. It won't be on our timeline, and it won't happen the way we want it to happen, but faith is trusting that God has not forgotten us and that God has promised us good. Now, here's the deeper thing. Here's the more radical thing. Whether or not you and I trust God, God will do what God will do. It doesn't depend on our cooperation, though I'm sure God would like us to cooperate. And that's why hope, this thing called hope, is so important. Because hope anchors us to the promises of God. Without hope, this world loses possibility. Without hope, our lives lose possibility. And we are left cynical, angry, and resentful. Now, just as the mysterious visitor had promised, Sarah did conceive. She did. She had a son in her ripe old age. And Abraham gave his son the name of Isaac, which means laughter. It was Sarah who laughed in the tent, out of sight of Abraham and God, and she overheard God tell Abraham that she would give birth to a son. But Sarah laughed. Sarah laughed like we all laugh when we don't believe things. Well, God had heard Sarah laughing in the tent. And God went in and said to Sarah, "I heard you laugh." But Sarah denied it. "I didn't laugh," she said. But deep, deep down inside, Sarah knew her laughter was hiding more than just her disbelief. Her laughter was also linked to the possibility that God was doing the impossible. It's enough to make anyone reconsider that the sheer audacity of God's promises might actually come true. And that, my friends, is good news. Amen.